Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
When I was little, maybe 5 or 6 years old, my older brother, Damien, he was 2 years older than me, he was having some issues with bullies in school. And so my parents thought it might be a good idea for him to take some self-defense lessons, go to karate. Because I admired him so much, I wanted to follow him into everything. My main recollection from my time, I almost said playing karate, doing karate, was I had a huge crush on this girl who was, I think, in my brother's class. She was a redhead. She reminded me of Annie.
Little Orphan Annie?
Yes.
Or Annie Oakley?
Oh, Little Orphan. Okay. You think as a 5-year-old I had a crush on Annie Oakley?
I'm surprised you had a crush on anybody at 5 years old.
Oh, yeah. My first grade teacher, Mrs. Farrell, Carrie Fisher in Return of the Jedi.
You were an active little boy.
I enjoyed the ladies back then. And so I remember her being in a higher skill level. She was in a class, I think she was like an orange or yellow belt. She had a colored belt. And I remember being very self-conscious because all the kids had to wait in the lobby for their parents to pick them up. And I used to take my white belt off right away so she wouldn't see that I had a white belt, and that my uniform, I had the smallest size, but I was so tiny that it still didn't fit. I had to roll up my sleeves on one of those. I forget what they call them. Gis? Oh, yeah. Is that, am I right?
I think
I don't
so.
Know where I pulled that from.
Probably your chat with our guest today?
Maybe so. Stay toned. That's what I was trying to do. I was trying to
Freudian
stay toned.
Slip.
Yeah, stay toned. Karate's great exercise.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream.
You're listening to Life is Short. I'm your story-filled host, Justin Long.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart.
And with me, as always, is my equally self-defensible brother. Wouldn't you say we're equally
good? Self-defensible.
Is that a word?
I don't think so.
Is that an adjective?
Self-defensible.
You're equally good at...
Are you trying to say that I'm capable of self-defense?
As capable
you are?
As I am, yeah. How would you say that?
Now or then?
Not then. You were like 2. I could have kicked your ass then.
I gotta say, your timeline seems a little off.
Really?
5 or 6 doing karate?
Yeah, I know. It sounds strange, doesn't it? But I just remember going to see...
It's definitely off now that I think about it. Yeah, because I remember Damien doing karate really clearly, and I wouldn't have remembered that if
you know
I was
who
2.
Would remember? Damien.
Let's get him on the phone! No, I bet I was about 7 or 8, and I bet you were about 10, and I bet he was 12.
What?
Yeah.
No, really?
I think so.
You know how I would know for sure?
He would have done karate at 8.
He did.
No way. Wrong.
You think?
Yeah, I'm pretty confident.
Do you remember when he did that Frankenstein
play? That doesn't mean
play?
That you weren't a horny 5-year-old, but I just don't know if that has anything to do with the story.
Well, I do remember having a crush, for sure, on my first grade teacher, Mrs.
I know.
Farrell. And I was so nervous because I had an R problem. I had a very bad R problem, and I couldn't say... Do you say R problem now? Is that passe?
I don't think you can say problem. You were R challenged.
Yes, that's, you can't say problem.
You were differently R'd?
Yeah, I said R's differently. I didn't say them the way
traditionally
they're said. Traditionally. I said them a little differently.
A little like Elmer Fudd.
Yes, and...
What's wrong with Elmer Fudd?
No, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, he was a Second Amendment person, I would imagine, Elmer Fudd. And he was certainly not a vegan.
We don't talk about politics
nope,
on the show,
sorry.
Justin.
But anyway, I do remember going to see Damien's play, the Frankenstein one. Sir Frankie's Hideaway. Oh, do you remember that?
Yeah, he was probably in 5th grade.
Okay.
Which means he was 11.
Oh,
which means you
really?
Were 9, which means I was 6.
Oh, you're right. Okay, all right. So anyway, fine. I did karate when I was 9.
Anyway, the timeline notwithstanding, you did karate for a week. Who cares?
Yeah.
I'll tell you who cares. I care because it has to do with our guest today.
Wow. You know, you're in line. A tie-up like that, a segue like that, puts you in line for a shorty.
Is that the awards show?
Yeah, I just found out that there are podcast awards.
What did we get nominated for?
I don't know. I don't know.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, check it out. No, I don't. We didn't get nominated for anything. But our friend, former guest of the show, Donald Faison's show got nominated.
That's cool.
Fake Doctors, Real Friends. It's really good. And we love Donald.
So speaking of...
Oh, yes. Sorry.
You were
I got derailed to promote somebody else's podcast.
You were a little kid who did karate. Yeah, for a week.
For about a week.
And who knows how old you were, but you were a kid.
Who knows
for
if
sure.
it was a week? Maybe it was a year.
Or who knows if you even did it?
You know what's funny?
You may have dreamt this Annie story.
No. That I know. Isn't that funny? That's the most concrete. That's the only part I can be certain of, is that I remember seeing that little redheaded girl in class, wow. and being very self-conscious of where she was and if she was looking at me, and loved Annie. But we've talked too much about Annie.
We've talked about this before, that you started you started getting an interest in girls at such a young age. It really
– You don't remember.
It baffles me that really? You were that young with that any – I know, like, it's not sexual at that age, but – Even like
I was so intrigued.
You were intrigued by, and I just wasn't.
Okay, like when you'd watch religiously Superman 3, you don't remember Annette O'Toole being like into Annette O'Toole.
Who's that?
Lana Lang?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
right?
Now I realize that she's an attractive woman.
But at the time, weren't you drawn to her?
No,
you
I was
weren't?
Much more drawn to Superman. Well, not
I know.
Sexually.
No, I know. Me too. But like that didn't excite you at all, Lana.
No.
It didn't intrigue.
I'm telling you, the first time I ever was excited in any way by a girl.
Jenny McCarthy?
Third grade.
Who was that?
I'm not going to say on the show. Third grade.
Third grade, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
I was like 9, 8?
Yeah, that's not that far from when I started, when they started piquing my interest.
Why are we talking about this?
I don't know.
Who cares when we started liking girls? We can talk about that.
We can, yeah.
It's our lives.
I know, but more appropriately for today is something we should be talking about, which is the karate element of that. Let's call it a story for argument's sake.
Okay.
Who else plays karate? I'll tell you who. R plays karate. Jesus Christ. Our guest today also did karate as a kid in a movie called
The Karate Kid.
Ralph Macchio is our guest today, our distinguished, you know, for me, this is, this ticks a bunch of boxes in terms of guest.
Italian.
Yep.
Handsome.
Yep.
What else?
That's it.
Okay.
Those are my main boxes. No, it's, I watched his movies religiously when I was a kid. Karate Kid was a seminal movie in my childhood.
Mine too.
Yeah.
Karate Kid does have to be seminal for both of you.
It was maybe more for you. I remember you being really into it. Right?
I loved it.
Yeah.
Who didn't?
I know.
Every kid, yep. And I'm sure most adults, loved that movie.
That might be hard for younger...
All of them. All three of them. And some like the fourth one.
Yes.
With...
Hilary Swank.
Yes.
Hopefully future guest.
Hopefully.
Great. Just so exciting. And The Outsiders, don't get me started, on Ponyboy.
I've never seen it. I'm ashamed.
You should be. My Cousin Vinny, of course you've seen.
Love it.
Yeah, he is part... And we talk about all three of those formative, cinematic feats. We talk about them. And what I find so interesting now about Ralph. Uh-oh.
What? That's his name.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Uh-oh. And that's uh-oh.
You thought it was Daniel LaRusso?
Maybe for a second. You know what is Ralph Macchio? It's the Macchio. It's hard for me to... Maybe I'm thinking of Ralph Fiennes. It's not Rafe.
It's weird to call Ralph Macchio Ralph.
It's weird to know him. Maybe that's what it is. It's very weird to know him.
Because you had never met him.
And he seems so familiar
and
to me.
And you've known of him.
Did I speak
your entire life?
I know. And his voice, his mannerisms, he was just so familiar. Somebody I looked up to. I mean, of course, I looked up to the character that he played.
Every kid did.
It's so weird. And what's weirdest about Ralph's, Mr. Macchio's, story, his evolution as an actor, is that he now is being known, he's widely known now to a whole huge swath of people who weren't familiar with him as kids, the way we were.
Because he's on a show now called Cobra Kai, which is the third season just premiered, just started.
Were you going to say dropped?
No, I was
but
trying to...
those shows drop?
I don't know. It's on Netflix.
Yeah, this drops.
And
this podcast drops.
It's a great show. It really is great.
It's so good.
I just started getting into it recently.
It is very, as they say, bingeable.
It's bingeable and watchable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now he's having this huge resurgence playing the same character he played in the 80s. And you guys talk about that. And I want to hear about it.
Let's do it.
Let's hear from him.
Because there's so many things I want to say, but we'll save it. And you're about to hear from... I hate to call him Daniel LaRusso because he's so much more than that, and we talk about how much more, and you're about to find out how much more. My conversation with Ralph Macchio, iconic actor in my life and many others, coming up right now.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do-do-do-do-shaboom.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, this ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up, we'll meet again.
My daughter is so excited that I'm doing this podcast. She listens to you all.
No.
Big time. She's a super fan from the movies and everything else, but
you're
doing that one.
Oh, well, I'm glad. What's her name?
Julia.
Oh, well, thanks, Julia.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad. I should tell Julia that I'm such a fan of her dad's. What does she think of that? What does she think of your fame, of people knowing you and liking you the way... You know, you just mentioned she listens to the show.
Listen, I'm geek dad, you know,
yeah.
I think she, well, I will say this much. This project right now, this Cobra Kai, what's happened with this show, and I never expected my kids, both 28 and 25 now, which is just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous.
Oh my God.
The fact that I'm 29, I don't know how it's possible, but no. So I never expected them to champion, be so just so proud of it, share with their my son was, you know, he graduated from college since, but the first two seasons it was like watch parties in the dorms, and
they're all
even this season they're all back and forth, you know, just watching it live on the phones together and remotely.
Is it kind of nice, Ralph, for them to get a taste of what you experienced? Certainly, in, you know, I see a poster of The Outsiders behind you in the 80s. Did you ever try to, I mean, not that you would try to convey how many people were aware of you and what your fame,
I think that's a great question. I think what I wasn't expecting is to have the, you know, the joy of what, of which it feels to me right now to have something that was so huge in my life.
Yeah.
Back in the day, that is now so huge in my house today.
You know, that's
not too many people get that, right? You know,
It's just like,
oh, there's dad talking about that again. And now it's like, it's all of a sudden a cool subject, you know?
Right. Because Karate Kid must be like, they must have their frame of reference. It's funny I'm now seeing what's happened to you, this resurgence through their eyes a little bit. And like, It must have been to them like, oh, there's a poster and I'm sure they've seen the movie, but they probably couldn't at all comprehend how massive it was. Story. Like I can, like I remember.
I have a great story. It's my son. This is one of my favorite stories. My daughter is, Julia is, so she was, I did a musical, How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
Oh, sure.
It was, Matthew Broderick did it on Broadway in his 96, and I did the national tour as the J. Pierpont Finch. It was really loud. And so my daughter was 4 at the time. My son was a houseplant then. We just added water. He was like a little infant child. Uh-huh. And so, you know, we would go, any city I would go to, we would have the Planet Hollywood press thing, you know, because you're in the, in a town for 2 weeks and you do your press for the theater, the Orpheum or wherever you are, the Fox Theater or whatever. And when it always happened at Planet Hollywoods. And then she started at 3 years old, start seeing this memorabilia up on the walls, if you remember what Planet Hollywoods were.
Yeah.
And she asked the question, like, why is daddy, why are these pictures and everyone standing on one leg acting really weird? And every time they see daddy or telling him that he stole a can of tuna fish or he should stay cold, whatever, you know, who is right. Pony Boy? Who is Pony Boy and why haven't I met him? You know what I mean? So, so that was at the time that she sort of, you know, and then at 5 years old, we showed her, not The Outsiders. That was later. And she read The Outsiders in school. Both my kids did, which was cool. But my favorite story is my son, when he came, I was like about 4, maybe a little older, maybe 6. He came out of my mom dropped off like a bin full of like 16 magazines and Tiger Beats and all that stuff.
Oh, my God.
He came running in the house, you know, with like 5 of them in his hands. And he runs up to my door and he says, "Jewel, dad was huge and we missed it." That's one of my favorite stories.
That's so great.
That's what answers your question of what it's
well,
like.
Well, yeah, now they're not missing it. It must have, but that must be so surreal to find those magazines. And like, I'm sure it was weird enough for you having lived through it, but like, at least with you, it was like, it was incremental. And it was like, what was that like though, Ralph? Take me back. Like, what do you say to your kids? Like, what would you say in a podcast? And how do you explain that to your kids? Like those magazines and that time in your life.
That well, now it's easier since they're adults.
Yeah.
But I wish I had. And this is when you wish you could have that timestamp and like go back in and watch the footage of how I reacted to that.
Yeah.
I think. You know, I think to them explaining sort of that time, for me, that time it's interesting. There's a window, you know, because I got really fortunate when you look at The Outsiders and The Karate Kid and My Cousin Vinny. Those are kind of 3 films that still hang in there.
Oh,
you know?
God. Yeah. Yeah.
They're on
three of my favorites
all the time. Yeah. And so it was a section of time. So you figure it's from 6 years of a chunk of time, maybe a little bit longer than that, that all that sort of happened for me. And, and I always explain, I've even talked to my kids about this, have sort of a unique existence when, and it's more with the Daniel LaRusso character, and it's changed slightly now with the relevance of Cobra Kai, you know, just being as big as it is around the world. But I would meet people over the past 20, 30 years. And for the most part, the conversation would always start with where I was when, you know, when I saw that movie, you know. And so I did it.
You were like a touchstone in people's lives.
Yeah. Good, bad, or indifferent. It's like, you know, I wrote something for Sports Illustrated, just a one pager about being frozen in time, being, John Wertheim is the he's on 60 Minutes now. He does stuff for them, but he's a great writer at SI. And he asked me to write this piece on what it's like to, in essence, be either the guy that threw the touchdown pass in overtime to win the Super Bowl or the guy who missed the field goal in overtime and lost the
right.
Super Bowl.
Scott Norwood. Yeah.
What the Scott Norwood or Jim Craig, the 80s. The 1980 hockey team. And so I wrote what that's like because that it's I kind of share that. I share a little bit of that being so associated with a character that people remember where they were when they saw the movie. And there's a sports element to it. So
that's
true. I remember talking to my kids about that and about that kind of uniqueness when you're so associated to one thing, and how to flip that to be a positive and not like, oh God, this again.
Yeah. You know? I mean, yeah, you know, obviously there are countless examples of like how it, you know, when it didn't turn out as well as somebody, what didn't have the foundation that, that you must have had, but what do you attribute to your remaining on your feet if you were ever out in the ether of getting back on your feet after that rush of fame? Because it's not just, it's also just like that kind of notoriety must have been, that's, I know it does something to you psychologically. And I can't imagine at such an early age what it does. How did you deal with that?
For me, it was an early age, but not as early as it might have looked because of my youthful appearance. There I go.
The Fred Gwynn
dad joke. There'll be a few more, I'm sure. But
do people say that to you a lot? Are you? Do they just say lines to you? I mean, you mentioned the Pony Boy. Yeah. I imagine that. Yeah.
Yes. I get because there are catchphrases from those.
Yeah.
I mean, Karate Kids had it. You know, from the sweep the leg to the. You know, there's so much.
Oh, my God. Every time you wash your car or wash anything publicly, I'm sure.
Yeah. I have a very dirty car. I chose to never wash it. It's like, why does your car look like shit? Well, because if I pick up the sponge, I got to deal with that. No,
yeah.
Just mud. Collect or the do it for Johnny's or the. You know,
If you've ever been asked to sign anything or anybody in your life named Johnny, I'm sure they
interesting because there's Johnny Lawrence, who is the nemesis in the Karate Kid and now Cobra Kai. And I played Johnny Cage. Yeah, I'll sign that. Signing the cans of tuna for my cousin Vinny. I've signed a few cans of tuna. Like I shot the clerk with a question mark.
Oh, I shot the clerk.
Yeah, I shot the clerk. You know, it's a pop culture element.
Of course. Oh, my God. I would probably be one of those annoying people who right. asked you to do something like that.
Yeah. It's kind of the thing that makes it easier now or less of an eye roll that I might have had going on in the 90s when I wasn't, you know, when I was what I call a lean years sort of as far as an actor, when I was doing more writing and jumping behind the camera and filming, you know, making some shorts and raising my kids. Those were the times it was, I was looking for, will I ever get out of this tunnel?
Yeah. Yeah.
But as the younger generation has gotten older, and I have these 12 and 15 year old kids and, the outsiders alone, I have this. So you run into these teenage girls, these 14, 15 that still think that we're like hot when we're like 60.
Right.
You know, but really love. So that, or I get the 8-year-old kid who wants to show me his crane kick on a given Tuesday. And that makes it all, then it's like, it's bigger than anything. And it's sort of, that's where I went from being like enough already. And I never was negative about it, but it went from like, okay, this is tiring to wow, what a privilege. You know what I mean? And that's why I look at it.
Totally. And just psychologically, it must be now that this thing has really hit. I mean, it's hit in like a crazy way. It's the number one show, and it must be easier, not easier, but it just must be more palatable, I guess, to deal with people coming up to you and saying those lines. Yeah,
it's a kind of a wonderful blessing, and they say it is you're bothered every day. And to me, the point, not right now. I mean, we're in this weird world where every day I'm pretty much at home or at work or someplace. Yeah.
I hope you're not bothered by it at home.
Yeah, right. No, not by the postman.
Yeah.
But it's as you get older, at least in my view, and I'd like to say wiser, I don't know. I think I just embrace, I have the opportunity to put smiles on people's faces and make them feel like a kid again. This show, I hear that all the time. I thank you for bringing back my childhood. Thank you for making me feel like a kid again. Now, I just said, okay, let's try this show. Let's see if we can pitch it and sell it. But I'm looking really super smart right now. But it's really a very satisfying feeling in our current world to sort of ray of light. And Billy and I talk about it. Zapka and I talk about it. I mean, it's just pretty wonderful to have that and to be spreading that kind of joy. Well, based on the revisiting of these characters.
Totally. And I had a similar reaction to it because I was a kid when I saw that. And it was a huge part of my childhood, as was The Outsiders and Vinny and all those movies. But I wonder, it's also the way you're doing it. It's such a smart way to examine those characters. And you know, we talk on the show, it comes up all the time. You never really know somebody. You never know what somebody's going through. And you don't know their history when people talk about encounters they've had that they regret or whatever, the fights they've been in. And that's what I find so fascinating and so watchable about your show now is that it really delves into these characters' lives in a way that, like, amplifies that message. You never know what somebody's dealing with, going through. It's a really special...
A dive into the gray areas of these characters. I mean, Karate Kid was clearly a very black and white, black and white storytelling, right? LaRusso is the underdog. You rooted for him. The Cobra Kai is bad. Miyagi is good. Uh-huh. He's the human Yoda to the young Skywalker. And
it's very clear.
Where Cobra Kai, your allegiance episode to episode could change. And certainly in the first season and leading into the second, LaRusso was set up a little more as an antagonist for the Johnny Lawrence redemption story. And that was what was fresh. That's what was interesting in the perspective shift and how the prism changes from whatever angle you're looking at. And that happens in the Next Generation cast and those stories as well. And this is the writing. This is a John, Josh, and Hayden. They were very specific about that.
Well, that's not, of course, yeah, but it's also you and Zabka are so good. I mean, you're just, the acting too, I think plays a big part. You both must have been so eager, especially, what is that like to have lived with this character as just like a thing? It's like just a part of the noise of your life. You mentioned talked about how your kids processed it, but just strangers. What is it like to then just get to dive in, just like dig in as an actor to these characters?
That was, I mean, it's both thrilling and terrifying at the same time. Terrifying to me only from the sense that if it failed.
I never wanted to fail
the franchise. I never wanted to do this because I didn't want to, you know, mess with it. It has become bigger than me, the actor, the film, and that character. He was the every kid next door that we all saw ourselves in. He had no business really winning anything, which made us all believe it. We could.
Yeah. Well, I always identified with Johnny, but yeah, most kids. I think, it's true. It's really sacred.
Yeah. So I was always very hesitant and certainly the last guy to come to the party, when they were putting all the pieces together, I was, you know, they had everything lined up and it was about how to pitch a show called Cobra Kai and a redemption story for Johnny and why I would go back. And that would
Oh my God.
You know, so it was a tough, they had a tall order and there were three guys who wrote rated R comedies like Harold and Kumar and
Those guys are, I know. I remember hearing about it just from but from that point of view, I was so surprised to hear that they were a part of something like that.
And it was, so for me, I knew Billy always over the years would come to me and say, you know, I think there's more room for these characters. But anything he came to me with sounded, you know, I said, well, who's going to do it? Are you going to write it? Or are we going to write it? I said, I know I can't write it. I won't. It's too precious to me. I'd be too kid glovey with everything. You know, I have people coming up to me with tears in their eyes. This character brought him, the fathers and sons.
So
I had a difficult time in school and Daniel LaRusso made me feel that I could overcome. So I
protection. I'm sure. And then to do that, at least the pilot, that first episode is like, LaRusso's kind of a dude. He's turned into, like, success has made him kind of douchey. That must have been That must have been weird.
It was weird. That was
embrace.
That was the tough part for me, because we shot all, you know, with the whole season was picked up. So we had 10 episodes.
Yeah.
YouTube. And so, you know, yeah, there was a negotiation with the writers, because I said, you know, I knew what you need. I said, I know what you need, because you have to have this guy so down and out, meaning Johnny Lawrence, so uh-huh. sleeping in the dirt.
You got to push him.
Fish.
There.
He didn't even have a turtle, and Rocky at least had a turtle. He had nothing, mm-hmm. right? No friend, no life. So how could we make LaRusso, everywhere he turns, it's the happily ever after on the billboards,
yeah.
you know? So I got the perspective. It was about negotiating, okay, how to add a human side to that so it doesn't become a one-off or a one-joke idea. And they had their finger on that pulse the whole way. It was just about me swallowing it when I say I kicked his face. It was like, that was the line that I knew. As soon as I say that line, it's immediately an antagonist, because it's a kind of a dick move.
You know? Yeah. And then there's Brett Ernst. Those guys are great.
Yeah, those guys are great.
I love Brett Ernst.
So that whole section, knowing that scene, the whole point for me was like, I have to give him a car for free. Like, that was my, uh-huh. and they had it in there. I said, the whole thing is, he's saying it because you got to remember, he's looking at a guy to beat the crap out of him and surrounded him 5-on-1. And,
it's true.
You know, so he had reason.
He had there's a little in there. It's a really, you're right, Ralph. It's a really delicate balance. It's a fine line to walk. You don't want to.
But I knew where we were going. And so when we get into season 2, and certainly season 3 now, diving into the origins of Miyagi-Do and the trip to Okinawa and reteaming with some great guest stars. I mean, it's great guest stars on the show, but you know, legacy characters from the films, and Elizabeth Shue and Tamlin Tamita and Yuji Moto. So they're all.
Oh, cool.
Season 3 is they're there, and it's so there's a richness, and now it's really a. It's balanced between LaRusso and Lawrence as far as protagonist, antagonist. It's always been that. But at the onset of the show, it clearly was set up the Johnny Lawrence, you know, redemption story. But Creed had just come out, the original Creed. I think they did a sequel, but I didn't see the sequel. But and so that was out in theaters when Cobra Kai was pitched, which was helpful. To them, because if it wasn't, I wouldn't have known. Can you go into the world of Rocky Balboa through the eyes of the villain's son, if you will, and then what does that story become? And it worked very well, and that only added to my confidence that if well executed, this is a smart way in, where you're not trying to tell that story of where's Daniel LaRusso and his house, and then where is Miyagi is no longer there. And we've seen that. This is okay. How could we back into that and then build?
It's interesting. It's
world.
Yeah, but it's both. It's redemption about somebody who has found, and it helps who hasn't defined success and who has this certainly the ideal looking family and all that. I just think it's so rich in terms of not only exploring the down and out character, but somebody who was successful from that story.
Yeah, and now they both get to, you see the loss on the Daniel LaRusso side. You see his, they're less demons, but they're more character flaws. And his knee jerk temper that he had in the original film that only gets amplified by a guy without his a mentor who loses focus, is going through a midlife crisis, is dealing with the responsibility of trying to pass on the teachings of his master, and what's just because you know the lesson doesn't mean you know how to teach it. You know.
Right. And how important it also amplifies how important Miyagi's presence was. And it's really heartbreaking early on in the series when he's looking at a clip, I think, where you just miss also just missing that guy. Then you miss. I'm sure for you, it's 100-fold missing Pat Morita.
That was magic. And him and I, it just was one of those things that it was just so easy to work with him. I think, you know, the usually this happens, the right actors usually get the part. you know? Mm. And in this case, the right actors got the parts. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over. Because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled babbel.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
Ralph, at the time, was it like... was it coming off of, because Rob Lowe was on here talking about, it was, I had no idea this is how they, Coppola cast The Outsiders. I didn't know he had like a, just a list of like little, like heartthrobs, teen heartthrobs. But then of course that movie was huge. And was The Karate Kid, was that a difficult audition process? Was that like, did everybody want that? Or was it, you had this success coming off of The Outsiders?
Well, what happened with The Outsiders was Rob probably explained, it was kind of brutal. Coppola had everyone in the same studio. You were just like, you read with Dennis Quaid and you read with Swayze, Mickey Rourke, which reads with Ralph. And it was, yeah. So now, okay, now you play so-and-so. And
he said the cool one, everybody wanted Rumblefish. He said that was like the cooler one.
Well, yeah, but Rumblefish wasn't on. See, Rumblefish was not on the books as being made at that audition, at the audition time of The Outsiders. When you were shooting The Outsiders and they were deciding to make Rumblefish, now we were all fighting to get into Rumblefish.
Oh, weird. Oh, my God.
You know, I remember speaking to Fred Roos, Coppola's longtime producer and essentially the one who cast The Outsiders and American Graffiti. We spoke about, I think Vincent Spano played the part that I was considered for Rumblefish.
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But to answer your question, The Karate Kid, I went into John Avildsen's apartment in New York City. I heard that, you know, I read the script and I saw the title and I said, this is just the cheesiest, silliest title ever. Maybe I was just on Fallon last night saying maybe it was foreshadowing that I thought if I ever got the part, I'd have to carry the damn thing for the rest of my life. Maybe that's why I like the title. But so I went to Avildsen's apartment and it was just him. The hallways were lined with actors. Everybody, so it wasn't like I had a specialty treatment.
My God.
And I walked past the poster of like Rocky and Save the Tiger, which I love, Jack Lemmon film. And there was John Avildsen in his little back office with a big JVC kind of camera and the battery pack. And this video you could watch on YouTube. If you put it in there, Ralph Macchio, Pat Morita audition.
No kidding.
Pat Morita did his audition separately. But this, you could check it out after the thing. You could watch reading live with Avildsen. And he's...
Do you remember the scene?
Yeah, it was the... after LaRusso wakes up after the beatdown at the skeleton beatdown at the fence, and Miyagi is he's questioning who he is and what, and he learns who Miyagi, the maintenance man, was, saved him, and now he wants him to teach him karate. You know, that's the J.C. Penney 398. You know, what kind of
It
was that scene. Yeah, and it was just John reading with me, and kind of at the end of it, he, you know, gives you a little glimpse of, I can't guarantee anything, but I would consider taking some karate lessons, which never happens. You know, he was basically saying, you know, you're a good actor. I remember he said, you're a good actor. And I was like, and it was weird. He almost said it with a surprise in his
face. He's surprised. Yeah. Who knew?
I was just some kid. I walked in with my members only jacket, and I was just so,
oh my God.
Long Island '80s kid.
And you said all the other kids were lined up in the hallway. Oh, you must have passed by guys that you knew. You must have.
Yeah, there were a couple. I remember John Cryer being there that day.
Oh, makes sense. Yeah.
I this was before, you know, his big success on television and everything else. But I had known him from New York theater. But it's interesting. It was.
I remember like New York guys at that age. I guess like Matthew Broderick or Fisher Stevens,
Fisher I've known. I wonder if you ever read. I'm sure they all, at my time slot, because it was just his apartment. And
weird.
And then from there, he called me back in to read with some actresses for Allie, and Elizabeth Shue. That's where I met her. And that footage too is on YouTube. You get.
Oh my God! I can't believe I haven't seen that.
Allie with an I, Daniel with an L, all that stuff that happened in an improv. You could watch that live later today. It's really cool. Appleson kept all that stuff, and before he passed away, asked if he could put it up, and he enjoy responding with the fans commenting about it.
No way! That's cool. It's so funny. It's funny you mention auditions on YouTube, because the one that I think I'm thinking of now related to you is I've always wondered if you've seen this, and I forgot to ask Rob and Matt Dillon. I've worked with. I never asked him about it because I figured the answer was no. But did you ever see Brian Attain?
Yes.
The Brian Attain. You have.
Oh, numerous times. Numerous times.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, it was just so. That was the. Oh my God! I remember Franco. I did the Deuce on HBO. Franco.
Oh yeah.
It was a great David Simon show, and
yeah,
and he brought that up too.
You know,
so many actors.
I bet.
And, I think he even had it on his phone in between takes of the Deuce at 3 a.m. when we're shooting in the Times Square in the '70s. And fun show to do.
It's interesting. So for those of you who don't know, Brian Attain he's a guy who auditioned for, I think, Juilliard.
Yeah.
I think he got in.
It's great.
I think I didn't, but it's this really big audition. But it's funny. But then afterwards, they cut to you doing the scene.
Yeah.
You do it when you're on your deathbed. And it's like, you know, the thing that's struck me about that is it just reminds you how good you are, how good of an actor you are.
First of all, thank you. When you put it side by side. He played it so.
Yes, he was going for a different thing.
Dramatic. Yeah, but the Outsiders is one of my favorite roles I ever played. One of my favorite performances, I think, because, I mean, I certainly was very invested in it. I read the book when I was 12. It was, I connected to it. S.E. Hinton's writing, a 16-year-old girl wrote that book, you know,
wow.
and Johnny Cade was just the part I wanted. I think Downey Jr., I think he did the workshop.
Who
was also a candidate for Daniel LaRusso. At the early stages, I was winning those battles, and then later on years, he Iron Man the hell up.
Yeah.
He's so talented. He's just sick talented. Oh God, I lost my train of thought. Where were we?
But when he auditioned, so he had done the table read or the workshop.
Oh yeah. No, I was talking about it. So the Outsiders, the reason why I'm so proud of that performance is, and some of this is due to Coppola and him sort of stripping away stuff and keeping me not editing myself, which often I do sometimes. I'm more results oriented than process oriented. And sometimes you have to let go of trying to get to that result and just letting the process play out. And he taught me, or at least he opened that up for me to just allow the behavior to happen.
Just to be more present, Ralph, like to not present
and just be. I think the scene that I would allude to the most is in the at the end of the film when Ponyboy's reading. If you recall, he reads the letter after Johnny dies, and you see a superimposition of me and Dylan as Dallas and Johnny, and I'm just reading the words, you know, of the letter that he is. If you hear me say
yes,
and when we were shooting that, Francis, I guess I was reaching, if you will, and it was early on, and he just kept wanting me to just let it go, relax, and just it's the most honest, one of the most honest pieces of film I've ever been in. There's a few of them in other places.
Yeah,
it really is truly honest, and I think that the performance of Johnny Cage is honest. I mean, it's like. You know, in The Karate Kid, there a moment like that is when I say to Pat Morita, "You're the best friend I ever had." It's
God, I'm getting goosebumps.
So those are the moments that I take the most pride in, and that are, you know, it takes work to get. It takes work to let go of it all.
Totally.
And it's hard for people to understand that.
Yeah. So, Ralph, just because I'm such a geek about this stuff, and I love Coppola so much, and I've seen some behind-the-scenes stuff of him. I love watching him in action. I love the way he speaks to actors. But how would you articulate that? Like, what would he say to you to strip that away, to get out of your head and do like a bad impression?
What he did, he would say, one of the things at The Outsiders, we did a bunch of sense memory exercises. We had 2 weeks of basically an acting camp, but the greasers were kept in one area, the socias were kept in another. The socias had like leather bound scripts and hotel rooms high up on the floor.
So you couldn't hang out with Diane Lane.
That we couldn't get near everybody.
That sucks.
So fantastic. But he, one time he just looked at me, he said, "You're too Long Island. You're too, he said, I'm going to give you here. We're going to give you, you take $5 and you spend the day and you find a way for that to feed you and spend the night out on the street." And, you know, and I was like, one part of my brain's like, call the agent. The other part of my brain is, this is awesome.
And that's funny.
This is awesome side. And I literally slept outside, you know, close to the hotel. They kind of knew I was there. On sort of this bench to try to get comfortable and not, and it was cold, and just to not have a place to go, which Johnny.
Were you in Tulsa, Ralph?
Tulsa, Oklahoma. And Johnny did not have a place to go. Hang on 1 second. I'll be right.
Wow, that is so cool.
I mean, Johnny did not have a home to go to, and I always did, and I was just. So I slept outside that night with newspapers on as my, like in the script, to try to stay warm. And incidentally, newspapers don't work.
Okay.
Keep warm. And then I bought some food and went to a 7-Eleven and was like, whoa, okay, if I have this for lunch, how am I going to make this for you? And I just did that for not 24 hours, but, probably like a midday till the next morning. I mean, as soon as it got a little bright, I was right back in my hotel room. I said, okay, I get it.
I did. Okay. I'm going to use it. I'll use it.
No. But it was another thing. Here's another good one. He said to me, I was doing a scene and he said, I want you to not play the darkness of it. And that's also in my audition and on the DVD extras, but he used this when I was shooting the film. He said, don't play how bad things are for him. I want you in the scene to be thinking about, even though the dialogue doesn't support this, I want you to be thinking about the one day your parents, your dad took you to say an equivalent of Disneyland. And it was a great day. And I want you to have the feeling of that day when you're playing the scene, even though the scene was like about the socials and him having some, I don't remember exactly what this specific dialogue of the scene was, mm-hmm. but it was sort of like, you know, it was the left hand, it was the left-handed side of looking at it. Because what he was trying to do, I see it now, is not play into the negative and the darkness and the internal.
So smart.
Terrible. You know, and another time he also said, he said, take a rock. I'm going to hand you a rock right now and put it in your pocket, the jean pocket of Johnny Cage, because he always walked around with his hand in his jean pocket. He says, and during the scene, instead of thinking about what you're saying, I want you to try to figure out what color that rock is.
Ah, oh, that's so smart. Yeah.
And it was basically, he was tossing me.
Get out of your head.
Yeah, get out of your head. Basically that. Yeah. And it wasn't like I had to do, this was every day. These were just three examples I could give you of stuff that he would do. And certain actors embrace that and other actors are like, get out of my shit. You know, I mean, you know, some people.
Some are more malleable.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. There's some stuff you do have to find yourself. But there's, since you're a big Coppola geek, those are a few tidbits I can give you that are real.
Well, that's great. That's so cool, Ralph. It's also not just Coppola, but like, you guys are all so, there's such good performances in those movies. Such great teen performances. You're all just so honest. And I'm thinking about that scene now, the Brian the teen scene, where you're just. It's just, there's a real truth that you're accessing, and it makes sense that you felt such a connection to it. You know,
yeah, I did. And that day in the hospital, that whole day, I stayed in that sort of, it's the paralyzed. I stayed there. I ate there. I didn't, you know, I had to go to the bathroom, I guess. I don't recall, but I was at that young, I just wanted to be awesome in that movie.
Yes,
Francis Ford Coppola is S.E. Hinton classic novel. It's the best part in the movie, or one of. And
yeah, my God.
At least leave it all out there. I remember I did an acting class. I took an acting class at the study of the Beverly Hills Playhouse, and I brought the scene in, that scene that, you know,
wow,
in the hospital for a scene study, just to, before I ever got the part.
Oh my God.
Get out of the book, you know, it was.
And how old were you, Ralph, when you did that? Were you?
When I was in the acting class, that was, when I did the, I was 19 when I shot, on the acting. Oh, so you got to add the macho curve. You got to take 5 to 7 years off.
Yeah. Mine is the same thing.
That thing too. And onto it as long as you can.
I was playing a college student when I was 27, 28. Yep. Wow. So, but you just loved, and you struck me as somebody who always just loved acting. You weren't like, you don't, never seem like a quote unquote child actor, like one of those precocious, like, hello there, my name is Ralph Maggio.
I never went, the truth is I didn't start studying it. And not that I've studied, been in acting classes for decades on end. But I didn't kind of pay my dues or till after I had my initial success. I mean, I just got the parts.
Wow.
But I got, there felt like a time where it's so funny because for a lot of years after that, it didn't feel this way. But there was a time I felt like when I walked in the room, I was just, it's almost like I couldn't not get it. Wow. It was a little window of time. Between the first movie I did, I did this movie called Up the Academy that Robert Downey Sr. directed. And that was my first movie. And then I did this show called Eight is Enough. And then for about a year. And then The Outsiders was the big, you know, the big street cred break. And then The Karate Kid. So all that just, I would just go in and either be a finalist or get the part. And then after that, it became... tougher, and I started, during that, my memory's getting a little blurred, but during that time, after Eight is Enough, before The Outsiders, is when I started to study, take some classes, because when The Outsiders were on the books, I said, okay, I'm not going to get by anymore looking quasi-cute, hitting the mark, and saying, sure, I'll have some, Mom. You know, that was running out of gas, and I kind of felt that was going to run out of gas. But I paid my dues after all that initial success through even The Karate Kid and stuff, because that's when it dried up. And that's when you know, I had to scratch and claw a little more.
Yeah.
After my cousin Vinny, even before my cousin Vinny, that started to feel that. My cousin Vinny was not an easy get. I had a fight to get in the room.
No kidding.
Plus, I was off the list, if you will, right? You know how that works?
Yeah, and Ralph, why? What do you attribute that to? I mean, there had been two sequels to Karate Kid.
It was being so associated with the Karate Kid at that.
Yeah.
That was clearly the word from the studio, 20th Century Fox at that time. And and I knew Joe Pesci because I did a play with De Niro on Broadway called Cuban is Teddy Bear, and it was a big deal in the summer of 86. And Joe we did it at the Public Theater for a few months and then at the Long Acre for a couple of months. And it was the ticket in town. And so I knew Pesci and I knew he was in it. But the studio was like, nah, they told Jonathan Lynn, the director at that time, was basically, nah, you don't, he's the Karate Kid. We don't want him. You know, you're just going to see that. You're going to have. Which is ironically what I felt when they brought Pat Morita in for the Karate Kid. I'm like, oh, Arnold from Happy Days? This is going to be terrible. So it's kind of fun. I'm actually writing something about that right now. Just the conceptual, you know, the preconceived notions of who you think an actor is. And
totally.
But it
makes sense. I mean, it's lame and it must have been really frustrating, but like, that movie, I was falling in love with movies during that time. That was such a seminal. I mean, it was just a massive hit. That like it makes sense. It's not right, but I understand.
They wanted. It was funny because at that point, it was like they were looking at Will Smith and Ben Stiller. Why? Because they were both right at the cusp of breaking out, right? And I was, you know, arguably on the other side of that hill at the moment as far as a young actor. And Will Smith actually came in to read when I finally got in the room to read for Vinny. He was one of the actors I read with, and he's one of the executive producers on Cobra Kai.
I saw that, and there was a Pinkett in there.
That's Caleb.
How did that happen? How did they find? Had you reminded him of that?
Yes.
Did he remember that?
Well, here's the thing: the reason why Overbrook and which is Will Smith's company, and Caleb Pinkett are EPs on the show is because when Jerry Weintraub, the original producer of The Karate Kid, allowed the remake, the Jaden Smith Jackie Chan remake. I guess they made a deal with Overbrook that they assumed some of the rights going.
Right.
In order for John, Josh, and Hayden, our great writers and creators of Cobra Kai, they had to get Sony Pictures, they had to get Jerry Weintraub Productions, they had to get Overbrook, they had to get all those ducks in a row. So that's.
Do you do a Jerry Weintraub impression?
Oh, Jerry, what are you kidding? He used to call me the kid that bought him a couple of houses.
That's good. Oh. Yeah, makes sense.
I mean, I love Jay. I miss him. You couldn't help but love the guy. You know, I would say this title, this Karate Kid title, and he would like, it's a terrible title, which makes it a great title.
That's really good. And that's real Jerry Weintraub wisdom, which is like, it's kind of true.
Yeah, that's true. That's the truth. My favorite is when we walked out of seeing the sneak preview of The Karate Kid and everybody was doing the crane kick on the street on 2nd Avenue.
Oh, my God.
And he just put his arm around me. He said, we're going to be making a couple of these. That's when.
Oh, my God.
That's when he knew, right? When people walk out of your movie and they're doing the move, you know, or they're running up the side of the steps like Rocky, you have a feeling you might be making more than one.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doot, 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 shaboom.
If you run an e-commerce business, you know the amount of work it takes to produce something great.
So if you want to optimize your workflow and reduce costs, ShipStation is the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates wherever you sell online.
ShipStation's simple dashboard makes managing orders, smooth label printing, reporting, and customer service unbelievably easy.
With shipping configurations automatically applied, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online.
Plus, save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off UPS, DHL Express, and USPS rates. Over 130,000 companies have grown their e-commerce businesses with ShipStation.
ShipStation is the innovative tool that helps turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth.
Go to ShipStation.com and use code LONG to sign up for your free 60-day trial.
That's ShipStation.com, code LONG.
When your work presentations and docs look good, you look good.
Design stunning work presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos with Canva.
Start with a designer-made template and use it as a springboard for your design.
Add images, graphics, charts, and more from Canva's massive media library.
If you feel like you have a lot of ideas, but it's hard to organize them into a succinct format, I can relate.
Yeah, so when we're putting together a pitch deck for a movie idea that we have that we're currently working on, mm-hmm. we're not going to use an old-fashioned deck. We're going to use Canva so our deck really pops. It's a complete game changer. So presenting our creative ideas, it's going to be like never before. We're going to wow people with our decks.
Wow any audience and finish your work faster.
Start designing today at canva.com, designed for work.
Hello, hello again, shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
Did you know, I mean, like, as a young actor then, you're walking out with this Hollywood producer, and you see that happening, the kid's doing the kick. How did that feel? I mean, did you have any
idea at
the time?
That was an amazing experience that night, because I hadn't seen the movie. And
wow.
And so I...
On 2nd Avenue, 2nd and 12th or 11th?
Baronet Carnet.
Oh, yeah.
59th.
59. Wow.
So it was a sneak preview in the days where they would have sneak previews with like real ticket buyers, you know.
And they
don't do that now, but it was when, you know, and it was a month before the movie was coming out, and I walked in sort of like a guy a couple people might have recognized from The Outsiders, and I walked out as like everybody's brother that they were just cheering. It was one of those moments in my life that is mine, all mine, kind of a thing. Very few people share that experience, because I had only heard that the film was good, and I didn't. You know, I was in virtually almost every frame of the darn thing, and people liked it. When you're a young actor, you can't conceptualize what that's like. You know, I grew up, Rocky was my childhood movie. You know, I ran up the steps all the time, and I would play the Bill Conti soundtrack. And incidentally, Bill Conti did the music in The Karate Kid, and it's so beautiful.
Oh, it's great.
A score to that movie. And so it's...
How close was your childhood to, now I'm picturing Rocky, and I know you grew up how Italian was your upbringing?
Not that Italian.
Oh, really?
We were pretty Americanized. We're like third generation. So it wasn't like my parents came off the boat or even my grandparents came off the boat. It was my great grandparents. Yeah. So it was, and for whatever reason, my dad cannot stand garlic. He claimed,
oh, no way.
My brother as well. So
you're kidding.
So we didn't have that. You walk in the house and you have that. Isn't that funny?
Oh, my God.
My dad's half Greek. So I have that side on my paternal grandmother. So I have the Mediterranean blend. My proud
lineage.
That's so funny.
So
my wife's parents were more with the gravy on Sunday and the seven fishes on Christmas Eve. And we were a little, I mean, we followed certain of those traditions, but it wasn't like.
Isn't that funny, Ralph?
Mud's house.
I mean, we're talking about making assumptions about people. I would totally have assumed that you were traditional, the seven course fish, Catholic, really.
Right.
Wow, that's funny. And And you have, you had siblings? You grew up with siblings?
Yeah, my brother, my one brother, he's a little younger than I am. Totally different path in his life. And he's doing well.
Did he ever have ambitions to be an actor? Like, were your parents?
No.
And did your parents ever, were they like, how into you being an actor were they?
That's a good question. That's a great question. My mom, I grew up watching what was called the 4:30 movie on Channel 11 in New York. And they were all the MGM musicals. And I grew up, you know, coming home from school, my mom would have it Singing in the Rain or, you know, whatever was on television. That would be my milk and cookie time after I got home, you know?
So yeah.
I watched Gene Kelly as a kid. She wanted to be, my mom wanted to be Betty Grable, like, you know, in her time. So she felt like she never got to do that.
It's so funny, Ralph.
She did not stage mother me and put me into, you know, theater class at all. I never felt that push, but I asked, can I do what Gene Kelly does? He's so cool.
Wow.
Handsome. So I took some dance lessons and I was in the theater at school and I would go to the musicals and I'd love that stuff. Dad was a little bit like, you know, I think concerned as your 5 and 6 year old, 5, 6, 7, 8. But I was also,
what are you doing?
I was at every Met game. I was at every Met game, dare I say.
Oh, no, you're talking to I thought I had my shirt on.
Yeah.
No, I'm same, Mets and Jets.
Yeah, Mets, Jets, and I'm a big Islander fan. That was our hockey team that won 4 Stanley Cups in the 80s. So I would play Little League, street hockey, and then and tap dance a little.
So there's a balance.
That's how balance, all about balance, is, as Miyagi would say to you.
Yeah, well, okay. So I'm getting a note that we got. For the record, I could do this for, you know, it's like the way dogs just will eat until they throw up. I could just talk to you for a long time. So, but I'm getting a note that we got to hurry it along. There was one other thing though. So it was dance. That's interesting. So your mom was into it. She was into it, but she wasn't like pushy.
She was not pushy in any way. But she was into it. My dad recognized that I shined, you know, so he was, I give him credit for not saying, you're not going to put my son in. He was not that kind of, you know, overly macho thing, but I'm sure there were moments where he said, are we sure about this? They couldn't be more proud. But right
now, when you're doing jazz hands at Shea Stadium.
Pass the salt.
Yeah. Kenny O'Brien, he's my man. Okay, well, we have like a lightning round.
So it's from the Jets.
Oh, Kenny, man. By the way, How do you feel about the last couple of games? It's like, God, they can't even lose when they're supposed
to. Yeah, I know. You play to win the game. That's what it is. I mean, if you're a player, I feel like they're going out there.
I know.
I wasn't disappointed that they. I don't like the setup with the draft that they could lose out just to get the number one. I think there's manipulation.
Well, then you look at the Eagles, what they did, and it's like, I wouldn't want them to do that.
Yeah. I don't love the way that's set up that way. But, you know, every new season, I'm like, it's all full of hope. I'm like, the Mets right now, full of hope. Islanders are on their way up. I think the Jets will rebound in some way.
Really been in. My brother was. We were big fans. And what about basketball, Knicks?
Knicks. My son worked for the Nets for a little while, so I got into. You know, he was working in data analytics for the Brooklyn Nets. Now he's working for the NHL. So he's a little bit of chip off the old block as far as the sports, not the math. He's got the math mind, thank God. My daughter is a dancer, singer, actress. She's fantastic, and your biggest fan. She did the national tour of Flashdance and the Jennifer Beals role.
No kidding.
And she did it in New Zealand as well, and she's got some other
shit
coming up. Yeah, I gotta wiggle her way into Cobra Kai, talking to the guys about that somehow. So,
oh yeah, my God,
that would be fun.
That would be great. That's so nice. And it's weird. It's weird. I mean, I'm so glad now they're getting to see you have the kind of success, the level that you had in the 80s and 90s. And it's really nice. I've always been such a huge fan of yours. It must be nice for them to see that, get to witness it.
Yeah, it is. It is nice.
And random weird question. You're talking about these actors that you came up with. Jerry O'Connell. Are you? Did you ever cross paths with Jerry?
I did. What with Jerry? What were you saying?
Did you cross paths with him? He was a New York actor.
I crossed paths with him once. We did a something in the Hamptons at the Guildhall. We did a celebrity autobiography together.
Oh, I love that shit.
I've done it a bunch in New York.
That's
Triad Theater, and I've never done it out west. Where are you now? You're at West?
I'm in Connecticut now, so you're
a ferry boat across and come up and visit.
You're in Long Island.
I'm in Long Island. I'm right across the. I'm one ferry boat away, and now I know where to find.
Go over to Port Jeff and see you guys. That's cool, man. Okay, well.
Jerry, I just met. That's the only time I've ever met him. I remember, you know, I followed his career. I mean, I've seen Stand By Me like 12 times in the theater when that came out during that time, and watched him. And then when he came, then when he was no longer that little chubby kid, I was like, holy crap. I mean, this is a transformation.
Yeah, I know. I know you guys just have similar, you remind me as kids of one another, similar like fearlessness. You're talking about those auditions, and Jerry would say, a similar thing. Yeah, I just did it. Every time I had an audition, there was just something very on. It's so rare, that kind of acting as a kid. I'm curious. Sorry, Rob. I got lightning round. I'm getting my second one. Oh, boy. I'm sorry. And I think you got a quick. Okay, here we go. I hate following up an apology with. What is your most commonly used emoji, would you say?
Right now, a thumbs up true. Right now, it's probably the strong arm and the karate gi.
Oh yeah. Oh good.
On Netflix, I mean, it's everybody's saying it's awesome. Love the show. It's great. I'm so happy, and I just keep sending the strong arm with the karate gi because those are the two. Yeah.
Unless it's very appropriate.
That may change.
If you could, depending on the next project, maybe.
Exactly.
If you could be a professional athlete, what sport would you play?
I think it would be baseball. That's a good question. I love when I was a kid, it was a hockey. I wanted to be the guy who, like, in overtime would skate single-handedly around the entire team and score the – so that was that. But I think baseball, I think I'd love to be that pitcher who is able to come in and just get it done, just lock it down. Not necessarily the guy in his knees. I want to make his knees buckle at the plate.
Yeah. Yeah, like
killer Bugs Bunny screwball that just makes – you know, to be brought in the bottom of the ninth, whatever, two on, bases loaded, and you have Babe Ruth up there, and you somehow, just the power to say, I'm going to take this ball, and there's no way you're going to be able to hit it. That would be cool.
Well, I'm thinking of you as a kid going in those rooms, because that to me requires a lot of like a steeliness that, like, I don't know if I've ever had as an actor where I can go into an audition and just, I'm going to get, there's a level of fearlessness that I think that requires.
I had that when I was younger. I lost that, honestly, in full transparency. I mean, certainly when roles didn't start to happen, then it became that very unhealthy, desperate, okay, now I got to get this. And then I change it. It's a fine line.
Totally.
It's day and night.
Isn't that amazing? And they can sense it. I mean, it must, like, reek. Yeah.
Yep.
If you could have one snack food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh, wow. I'm going Kit Kat right now. I don't know why. It's wimpy. It's just
Kit Kat's great.
It's cool if it's, you know, not too warm. It has to be cool, so it's got a little snap to it.
You don't want any mushiness. You don't want it in the pocket. I just had there was a Kit Kat for this past Halloween that had a marshmallow flavor, which sounds gross, but I recommend if you can find them in the store, a marshmallow flavored Kit Kat. White and delicious. Who was the biggest on the outsiders you're going on? I'm thinking of Matt Dillon. I guess, you know, Matt, I know, enjoyed a night out. Who was the guy who was like, come on, let's do it?
It's funny because there was a everyone had their day in the sun of being that guy. Probably least of which was me. I mean, I think Rob Lowe said he was buy me a t-shirt that said do not disturb. Because that's what always was on my door. I was studying my lines. I wanted to be over serious about being awesome in the movie. And I needed, and I think that's why Coppola was giving me those little pieces of just loosen up, stop thinking.
Yeah.
I wanted to be so great that sometimes eager in the way, you know. You know, there were times Cruise was that guy. There was times Swayze was that guy. You know, I had Matt was. You know, Matt was a little different because Matt and I've remained friends with him over the years. He's done some play readings with me, and we've
connected. Hey, man.
Hey, man. You know, he's like, he likes me. He's so funny.
He's so funny. And I want to hear your Matt. I feel like you have a Matt.
I don't
Dillon
have
impression.
A great one. Oh, hey. Well, one time we were doing the scene in the back seat. I'm eating all the barbecue stuff with Ponyboy, and he's like, "We're gonna get you a hideout, a hangout, a hideout, or whatever." He's like, "You know, you think my father would care about me? No, they don't give me crap about me or nothing." And he couldn't remember these lines because it was tough. He had a lot of lines. And I worked with him, and those impressions are not the ones I'm doing. I'm leading to the one that I know how to do. It's when I went to his hotel room and I ran the scene with him right down the hallway. And we ran it over and over and over because we had to go back in and finish it up. We never finished it. And he said to me, he goes, you're the most professional actor I've ever worked with. At 18, that's what he said. And to this day, I didn't know what that meant. I was like, professional. I was just running along. I just wanted to get done with the scene, you know. But I think we have a mutual respect in that way. I love his ability to be as raw and just, you know, have that.
Yeah.
Have that star element about him at such a young age, and to ad lib and try and not totally be in the book all the time. And he did that with Dallas, and I was. More, I had his lines, my lines, and the next guy's lines memorized. And so,
yeah, wow. Well, he must have been,
you know.
Yeah, I remember him saying to me a similar thing you said, which is after, you know, when he did The Outsiders, just like he would say, you know, Francis knew I was that guy, man. He was that guy. Great. So there's the idea that he didn't have to really work. I mean, not to dismiss what he did in it, but like, so he said he started studying after that movie. I mean, he really concentrated on. I wonder if it was having worked with you now.
Who knows? Maybe a little bit. I hope I rub off some bit of pause. I love Matt. I really do. I mean, I had a script once that I was talking to him about playing a part, and it never came to fruition. But he did come and do a reading of it for me, and you know, something I wanted to direct that never came to fruition. But he. Yeah, I said, I sent it to Francis, too. He goes, be careful, Francis. He's a script Nazi. You send it to Francis, he's going to send it back and all chewed up and spit out.
Wouldn't you love to have witnessed Matt getting the script back from, what is this, man, with all the notes? That's funny. Ralph, what's your favorite movie sequel of all time? You can pick one movie sequel.
Wait, say this again. Sorry, brother.
What's your favorite movie sequel of all time?
That's a good one. I mean, Godfather 2 is the easy answer, but in a weird way, in the more poppy popcorn way, I would say Terminator 2.
Oh, yeah.
I just remember seeing that, the liquid man thing and how the technology and that rock.
Mind-blowing.
It's just...
I don't think people... I sound so old now, but at the time it was like mind blowing could do that. What's your go to karaoke song?
I don't do karaoke.
That's okay. Your first celebrity crush?
Probably Anne Margaret in Bye Bye Birdie.
Oh yeah. Oh, great. Yeah.
Right? Isn't she in Bye Bye Birdie? It's a brain fart.
What's the matter with kids?
You're going with that. You're going with Paul Lynn.
Yeah.
What was it?
Paul Lynn. That was my first crush. I think she was in Bye Bye Birdie.
I hope so. Early Candace Bergen also. But no, it was definitely Anne Margaret. and mm-hmm. Bye Bye Birdie, and early Marilyn Monroe
on Channel
4:30 movie on Channel 11.
On Channel 11, sure. WPIX, was that WPIX?
Yep,
if you had to get a tattoo, I don't know if you have them, or if you had to get another one, where what would you get and where?
Where would it be, or what would it be?
Well, both.
I'm not a tattoo guy, but I would probably. I don't get the ankle tattoos. I'm going over. I'm trying to see what this would be.
Yeah.
Now, I'll tell you this much. I have seen many and been asked to write Stay Gold on a lot of people.
Oh, I bet.
And I've written it, and they've gotten it tattooed. And since that was the first big break movie role of my life, it would be Stay Gold, and I would probably put it... Oh, I don't know. I couldn't put it on a bicep because then it would get lost. Not with these, you know, these things. I don't know. Shoulder, back of the shoulder, something like that. Not
I'm making the taint. Maybe the taint.
Yes, right.
If you, your favorite fruit. What's your favorite fruit? Nice ripe piece of.
Honeycrisp apples, right now.
Oh, I just had one. They're in season now. Incredible.
Champagne of apples, man.
Who would you want to play you in a biopic in the Ralph Macchio story?
Oh my gosh. I've never given a thought to that. My God. Maybe I should have Sholo from our Cobra Kai show. He's sort of like the millennial Daniel LaRusso. He may be a good Ralph Macchio. Because for years I toyed around with trying to find the right script to do the Sal Mineo story, because
oh my God, that's right, I read that.
I so was, Johnny,
looked, oh my God, you perfect.
You know, Johnny and the Outsiders. There were a lot of reviews that were saying a young Sal Mineo, and you know,
yes.
Without a Cause, and some of those other films. And his life story is just so dark and fascinating.
Yeah,
but I regret never coming to, because now too much time has gone by. That's a role that is not that it got away. It never, I mean, I know Franco made a film called Sal, but it was, that was not, that was a little bit different, but that was something, I even spoke to Coppola about that, you know, we're trying to, it was about fine, you know, it's just one of those things. Sometimes they come together, sometimes they don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Dogs or cats do you prefer?
Dogs, not even close.
And the Beatles or the Rolling Stones?
Wow, I'll go Beatles, even though my wife will kill me. My wife is such a star. I love both because the blues infused into the Stones. That's a tough, that's a, that's
you're,
a
nasty, I know, sorry.
That's a nasty.
Yeah. And you're watching TV, Seinfeld is on and Friends is on.
Seinfeld.
What do you watch?
Seinfeld.
Yeah.
I mean,
do you have a favorite episode?
I can watch both any day, but Seinfeld.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite episode? One that jumps out? Oh, I'd like to see that one again.
God, I remember watching Master of My Domain. I remember watching that myself, by myself. And I just, you know, it was just pure perfection. So,
perfect,
I mean,
yeah.
It's a fastball down the middle, but that's, you know.
Yeah, no. For a reason. I remember seeing it with my parents, unfortunately. And I was, you know, 13, 14. I was right around the time when I was becoming... trying to be master of my domain. And Ralph, what are two adjectives that you would want people to use to describe you after you've gone? This was a little morbid, I know, but if you could think of two, you know, it's something you'd want, if you could witness your own eulogy.
Genuine, because I try to be. Oh, this is hard, man.
I know. It's not a good lightning round.
There's a million of them. I'm trying to do, I'm listening to Coppola tell me to get out of my head. So I would say genuine and positive. They're lame, but.
No. I know it's a lame.
Was mentioning those two things when they were talking about me, that I was positive and genuine. I think that's not a terrible thing to spread.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you definitely strike me as both, and I'm so happy for all the success now, and the show's so good, and you've just been such a pleasure to talk to. Thanks.
Best to you, and thanks for your support, man.
So. So that happened. So that happened. New York.
That's a little too Sopranos.
Yeah, maybe. But, you know, can't you see him on that? He's got this great – I love that New York kind of confidence.
He's such a guy.
He's a guy. Yeah, you know? He's got this real – he's
I know you're
sure
not supposed to say that anymore,
I know.
But he really is. He's such a guy.
He's not a woman.
No, but he's a man, but
you can't use it as a – you can't say – you can't – I know what you're saying. You can't be so positive about
– him being a guy. But there's something about him, like when you –
because that implies that being a woman is not strong.
I'm not implying that. But like when you talked about sports at the end with him, I didn't know that he was into sports as a person.
Uh-huh.
But of course – I would have guessed he is, and sure enough, he is. And he knows a lot about it.
Wouldn't you have guessed those teams? The Jets. It makes me
like the
Jets.
And the Islanders and the Mets.
Yes, kind of like
he's a Mets fan. Like that is.
Yes, yes.
For anyone listening who lives in this area, the tri-state area, there's a pretty clear difference, I would say, between Mets and Yankees fans and Jets and Giants fans. It's a different type of person.
How would you articulate that? Why does he embody a Mets fan versus a Yankees fan?
I don't want to get in trouble with Yankee fans, but
if there's something more working class about
for sure,
and all part of it is rooted
it's like also real New Yorkers. I mean, real New Yorkers tend to be not that we're real New Yorkers. We're like
tri-state.
Yeah, we're Connecticutites.
Kids. Yeah,
Connecticutians.
Connecticutians, but to your point, a lot of fellow Fairfielders that we grew up with, most of them were Yankees fans.
Yeah,
their parents were wealthier. Mm-hmm. The tickets were more expensive. Mm-hmm. It comes down to that, just like the economics of it. Like we were Jets fans because Giants tickets were much more expensive growing up.
Also, those teams are historically worse. Mm-hmm. The teams that we root for are historically worse.
Yeah,
and so there's something about the pain that comes with rooting for them.
Yeah.
It strengthens you.
Yes,
you know,
it's true.
It foments your fandom.
Yeah, it galvanizes your communal bond.
It's easy to be a Yankees fan.
I know.
They always spend the most money, and they've won 27 championships,
Fans are always so, like, disappointed when they only make the championships, you know, or they, like, don't make the World Series, but they always get so far. I mean, they always, like, they almost always win their division. You know, maybe not lately.
Anyway, Ralph Macchio.
Yeah, I know.
Hell of a guy.
Oh, what a guy. And
so fun listening to his voice. Also, his voice.
Surreal,
I know,
right?
He's like famously youthful. You know, he referenced it a couple times how youthful he is and how he's always been youthful. He's always looked younger than his age, and he still does. But his voice still has that youthful energy.
I know. To the point where I didn't know that I didn't know how old he was before we did the show. And when he talked about his daughter having a 27-year-old daughter, who listens?
She's a shorty.
She's a shorty. Hopefully she's listening now. Your dad's great, by the way. You know that. Why am I telling you that? I should tell you something you don't know. Yeah, she 27. I thought, God, he must have had kids really young. But then I looked him up. I should have looked him up before I talked to him.
He's 59.
59! He looks and sounds, you're right. So it's more than looking a certain way because, you know, I don't think he gets this stuff done, but like people have a way of preserving their looks now that they didn't back then. But his voice, he has this youthful quality, this kind of like – and the way he talked about everything – I mean the way he talked was that there was this youthful exuberance, this excitement that he had. I love the idea that he – I didn't know. I kept harping on that he, his kids are able to see him at this as a well-known person because, like he said, those were the lean years when he was growing up.
What a fascinating trajectory he's had in his career, going from this this teen idol, this huge success. Everyone knows him. He's in this iconic movie that people still talk about constantly. To almost becoming a victim of his own success.
Yeah.
He talked about having a hard time getting in the room for My Cousin Vinny because he was the Karate Kid and he was too known for that one thing.
I believe that.
And that led to the lean years, which, I mean, by my calculations is like 20 years or something. Mm-hmm. That's a long time. And now he's like back with such a vengeance and is so hyper relevant again. It's such a great story.
It is. It's similar, I guess, to Mark Hamill's trajectory. You know how Mark Hamill he didn't really do much. He did a lot of voiceover stuff, but he didn't do a lot of things that were, you know, people were aware of, like the...
Here's why it's different, though. Here's why it's even a better story with Ralph Macchio, because Mark Hamill, yeah, he came back to play Star Wars, or Luke Skywalker, but those movies are... Yeah. They're such ensemble movies, and it's so much more about the movie itself than it is about the particular actors in them.
It's true.
That I feel like Ralph Macchio in The Karate Kid playing that part is such a... It's so much more important than Mark Hamill's role coming back in Star Wars. You know what I mean?
That's true. That's true. I guess I just mean psychologically for those guys, for those actors, as actors, you know, people who know the ups and downs, and to go from, God, I mean, I don't remember what Ralph Macchio, I felt bad that we weren't referencing things he did in the 90s or the 2000s or the I mean, it's been quite a long time since My Cousin Vinny.
But they're not things that... he worked, but they're not things that people are particularly interested in, and he knows that.
He knows that.
He was very comfortable talking about how he started out and the auditions. And
he was. That's why I think you'd have to be, so it doesn't either drive you nuts or make you corrupt you in any way. And I don't know if I said this to him, but I certainly tried. I think it was such good time to me. In the bigger picture, now looking back at it. I wonder if it strikes him as being good timing to have those lean years, because he probably was a much more present father.
Sure. He said he doesn't have tattoos. He's not a tattoo guy. But if he had to get one, he would get Stay Gold Pony Boy. And he was speculating where on his body he might get it. And you suggested his taint.
I'm so glad he didn't.
And I thought that was an interesting thing to suggest to your boyhood idol.
I was trying to make him laugh.
Well, it made me laugh.
Yeah, okay, so. Good. Okay.
Let's read a letter.
Okay. This is a letter from Nikki Cornelius.
Cool name.
Yeah, I was just about to say, you don't both ever think Nikki Cornelius is a cool name? I was just about to say that. What does Cornelius remind you of? Go.
Cornelius. Yukon Cornelius.
Yes, me too.
From Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Cornelius. And a little like, I think like Cornelius West, but I know that's not his name. Cornell. I know. But isn't Cornell short for Cornelius?
I don't know. Hopefully future guests of the show, though.
I know. That'd be great. Subject, would you rather 2020 edition? Hey, guys. We did it. We made it through 2020. And while I know nothing is really going to change on January 1st, the idea of a new year with a fresh start brings a lot of hope. Well, I'm not one for New Year's resolutions. I have decided to start a gratitude journal so I find something good in every day to be grateful for, even if it is just a hummus wrap. I like that. A gratitude.
I thought you meant I like a hummus wrap.
Well, I do.
I do
like
too.
That too. But I, you know what? I'd be too lazy to write down those things. And there's so many things.
You definitely would be.
I shouldn't.
But that's a good idea, though.
It is. If I had been keeping this journal throughout 2020, discovering your podcast would have been a big topic. Oh, thanks, Nikki. As the first and basically only podcast I've ever listened to. Okay. So you don't have much to compare it to. Back to her. I just listened to you on Armchair Expert after getting caught up on Life is Short. It was just what I needed to get me through the second half of this crazy year, which is the perfect segue into my first Would You Rather 2020 edition. Okay, here we go. Would you rather be stuck in an infinite time loop for the first 6 months of 2020 or the last 6 months of 2020?
Ooh.
Everything that really happened during those 6 months happens, and you do everything exactly as you did during that time. That's a good question. That's a good question
for us. It's a good question and a really horrifying thought.
Either one.
Yeah.
First or second month. I would say...
What would you say? What would you pick?
Well, here's why I would pick the first month.
First
half. I'm sorry. First 6 months. I would pick that only because for part of it, we were filming the movie that we also talk about as much as we talk about how grateful we are to Dax Shepard, Lady of the Manor. We were filming that, and it was mostly fun. I mean, there were a lot. I know there were like tremendously stressful elements of it that I wouldn't want to relive, but it was still exciting. Even the stressful elements were like.
So that's why you'd pick the first half.
And we got a little bit of the quarantine, which I was doing, finding good things in the quarantine, trying to, it was scary, of course, as we've said, we were lucky during the quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
So I would pick the first half. The second half became a little bit more ripped. Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think there are great elements of each half and things that I would want to hold on to, and bad elements, like having COVID in the first half.
Yeah.
But I would still pick the first half because...
Well, you had a minor version.
But I'm saying highs and lows for both halves. But I would pick the first half because it just got tedious. The second it became a little bored in the house, and the house bored.
Yes.
So the second half, and I started to get a little my nerves started to fray a bit in that second half.
I think a lot of people relate to that. but really good. Would you rather? Interesting. And there's another one. Yes. Would you rather be stuck in quarantine with your ex and their new significant other? We had a similar one to this. Or be with your new significant other and your ex? Would you rather be stuck in quarantine with your ex and their new... Oh, I see. Or be with your new significant other and your ex?
See, there's too many variables. First of all, it depends
on who.
Which ex. And also... Yeah. Who knows what the person they're with now is like?
Yeah, because most of my exes I'm really close with. I would
I don't really mind being
– and I like their significant others.
If I'm imagining an ex and I'm imagining a person that –
Can you pick the ex?
I'm imagining a specific ex and I'm imagining the a person that they might be dating now.
Yeah.
If I had to guess the type of person they'd be dating now, I have an image of that in my head. So that's one – That's one side of it. And the other side is I'm imagining Maggie with that same ex. And in that scenario, I would pick the latter because it's at least I have her.
Yeah, of course. It's different for you.
And at least I have her, and then I could deal with – but that other scenario
– I'm sure Maggie would get along with the ex eventually.
Yeah. But the other scenario is I'm with – just me and these two people who I don't really want to spend a lot of time with necessarily.
Right.
So you got to pick.
That'd be tough. And it would also be tough. I'm thinking of an ex that I really love very much. And I totally get along with her partner. But it might be a little difficult. You know, it might be a little hard.
We're in very different positions.
Yeah, we are. Okay. Okay, so back to the letter, Nikki. Thanks for all the laughs this past year. I look forward to you making me smile and laugh some more in 2021. No pressure. And also thanks to Allison Brie for ending the year off talking about how amazing cats are. Yeah, Allison loves cats. They aren't assholes, and Justin, it's not their fault you're allergic to them.
That's true.
That's true. That is very true. I don't think they're assholes. Did I say they were assholes? Some cats can be assholes. Some dogs can be assholes. A lot of people can be assholes.
Yeah.
They just want to love you and be loved by you. Smiley face. A nice smile. I like that smiley face. That's like, you know, it's the first of the first up from neutral smiley face. It's just like a little raised.
Like this?
Yeah. Yes.
Why are you laughing?
The way you did it. You look like a little
there's
spacey.
Like nothing glazed. Behind
yes,
the eyes.
You glazed over your eyes. That's scary, actually. Okay, back to Nikki. Sorry. I love you guys. Nikki C. Granville, Massachusetts. Where's that, Granville?
I think it's in the Berkshires, isn't it? Or near there?
It is right up, right over the border.
Huh.
Wow, right in the heart of the Berkshires. That's cool. That's really cool.
Well, thank you, Nikki.
And
congratulations
Nikki.
For living in the Berkshires. And thanks for writing in. Those are good.
It's not so far from Springfield.
Those are good would you rathers and
Springfield, Massachusetts.
I'm really glad you're listening.
Yeah, me too. Sorry.
Let's get off Granville.
Oh, I know. But what do you think of when you think of Springfield?
Basketball Hall of Fame.
Okay. Yeah, me too. Okay, who cares? you don't bother to think of Basketball Hall of Fame when you think of Springfield, Massachusetts. Okay. Well, yes. Thanks to everyone who heard that.
If you guys want to write in our email address.
I hope Ralph isn't still listening.
I do.
Yeah.
Our email address is lifeisshort@wondery.com. We really like getting your letters, even though we only read one of them every episode. We read them all.
Yes.
And we enjoy them all.
Yes.
Almost all of them.
Yeah. And we don't only read letters written by people named Nikki.
That's true.
Clarified that.
That's true. You don't have to be Nikki, or you don't have to be from the Berkshires.
That is true, too. I should have made that clear. So thank you to everyone writing in and listening. And thank you so much to our esteemed guest,
our childhood idol,
maybe future pal,
maybe
Ralph Macchio,
genuine and positive.
Yeah,
he really does seem genuine and positive, doesn't he?
He does, and I know a lot of people can fake that. A lot of people in our profession fake that, but you know, it seems really authentic. And I also want to thank his daughter. I think Julia Macchio. I don't know why I said Macchio.
I don't either.
Oh, boy. Julia, that's so nice of you, because I have a feeling you had a lot to do with your dad doing the show. And And you had a lot to do, as it turns out, with us maybe eventually becoming friends and all going to a Mets game together.
And everyone should go out and watch Cobra Kai. It's a fantastic show. And
so good.
We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long, the podcast kid. It's co-hosted by you, Christian Long. And it's also produced by Megan Monaco. Senior producer is Michelle
Mish.
Lands. Audio engineer is
Sergio Enriquez.
On this particular podcast, there are two executive producers, one of whom is
Marshall Louis.
The second one, but not lesser,
Hernan Lopez.
For a company that remains
Wondery.
Margaret, did you see this?
No. What
is it? This is crazy. This Claire's about to tell Dale that she loves him.
Oh, I'm gonna see.
She's in love with him, and Dale asked for the first time about her parents.
The first time.
Yeah.
They
haven't had time together. They've just been like making out. And she goes, oh, my dad's name is this, and my mom's this. And he's like, and she goes, and, you know, they met one time. They only met once and hung out once. And my father, she's saying, like, this is a romantic thing. My father drove across the country to be with her, to propose. And this, his reaction is, what? That's crazy. And he's about to have to do that.
Wait, what?
Well, listen to what happens.
This, wow.
This is great. Wow.
You think they met once?
She makes terrible decisions.
What? And 3 weeks later, my dad showed up at her house mm-hmm. in California. Mm-hmm.
They met one time?
He hitchhiked.
He's incredulous.
He didn't have any money to propose to my mom.
And they met one time?
They met one time. And 3 weeks later,
James was committed.
He was so committed.
But he's thinking James should have been committed.
Yes.
After one time.
She's like, and she thinks it's amazing and romantic.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.